The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Roadhome Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
Okay, here's the deal. 8:07 o'clock.
Yeah!
It's time for 92.9 The Game Tonight.
For the next hour, tune in or listen on the Odyssey app.
As we get you caught up with all things Atlanta sports and beyond.
We're going up tonight.
Turn up, bro. Like I said, just turn up and listen. You know?
Best way to lead the show.
It's 92.9 The Game Tonight on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Oh, it's Tribble at night. Yes, Rob Tribble with you till 10 o'clock. Gee, where to start? Falcon fan base on the warpath. They're going to chase Kirk Cousins out of town as if he were Frankenstein. They're going to be villagers with torches. He is public enemy number one right now. How long before we see Michael Penix? We're going to get into that. But, of course, the big news staring us in the face right now at 8 o'clock, college football playoff selection. Or the rankings, actually. You have to tie in the loose ends with the with the conference championship games on Saturday. Of course, Georgia is going to try to make it 2-0 over Texas at 4 o'clock. And my big question is, how much does Georgia have left after that very emotional, very physical game against Georgia Tech that went to 8 overtimes? Don't underestimate that. Texas, they didn't have too many problems with that Texas A&M out there at Kyle Field at Texas A&M College Station. But Georgia Tech gave Georgia everything they could handle and actually snatched defeat from the jaws of victory. What does Georgia have left? They certainly have a lot to play for. Now, pretty much, you can almost guarantee that both Texas and Georgia will be in the college football playoff. But Georgia has a lot to play for in spite of that guarantee. The fact is, I know Kirby Smart wants another SEC title. I think he is under five. Dom, is he under 500 in SEC title games? I think he is.
That
like
sounds
two
right.
And three. Yeah. He's got a couple.
I know, but I just feel like the majority of them came against Alabama, and his record against Bama isn't too great.
We know what that is. We know exactly what that is. Yep, absolutely. And I think Georgia desperately wants a bye week. And they will get a bye week if they win the SEC championship game. If they lose that game, guess what happens? You heard Dukes and Bell talking about the notion they may have to go to Notre Dame. They may have to go to Ohio State. You don't want to go to Columbus, Ohio, or South Bend, Indiana on December 20th.
And just for the record, Kirby Smart is 2-4.
2-4. I thought he was. Games. Thank you. Look at that. My crack research staff, Dom himself, and also our valued, greatly valued producer. So Georgia definitely has a lot to play for on Saturday. So does Texas, for that matter. But it certainly is interesting what college football has become. The self-importance that the SEC has and has always had, thinking they've been the class of college football. And, yeah, of course, they pretty much have. Well, Alabama has. And everybody else in the SEC outside of Georgia is kind of coattailed on that reputation. But think about what's transpired in college football this year. SMU, where were they last year? They were a group of five school. Where are they this year? They're in the ACC championship game taking on Clemson. Oregon had the best season in the Big Ten. Their first year in the Big Ten. They come from the Pac-12, which was kind of an afterthought in college football with their poor TV deal. Texas had the best year in the SEC. The same Texas team that always seemed to bumble around in the no defense playing Big 12. It's crazy. It's a crazy time in college football, certainly. And the fact in the SEC, the self-importance of the SEC. I think back when Missouri joined the SEC, and all the SEC schools were just kind of giggling to themselves and like patting Missouri on the head. Yeah, they're there. Okay, welcome to the conference. What did Missouri do? What did they go to 3 straight SEC championship games? They came in and asserted themselves immediately. So the SEC, a little bit self-important and riding a bit too much on Nick Saban's reputation, on Kirby Smart's reputation, and certainly lately maybe what happened under Urban Meyer at Florida to a certain degree, absolutely. But it's just an unbelievable time in college football. And at first when they announced the 12-team college football playoff, I was thinking, this is going to be nothing like March Madness. We're going to have a lot of upsets and Cinderellas. I'm starting to walk that back a little bit, considering, well, this evidence I just gave you, especially when you look at SMU. They were a group of five team, and they're in the ACC championship game this year. And you think about one thing, and this is what's always been, I think, the unintended consequences of NIL money, especially when you give a lot of money to an incoming freshman who just got done playing high school football. And I've heard off the record several coaches talking about players just don't listen anymore. They do not listen. And if they don't get their way, and if you discipline them too harshly, they're just going to enter the transfer portal. And the idea of a kid being so talented is so tantalizing, coaches are willing to overlook all the red flags when it comes to their behavior and maybe their innate psychology and their sense of entitlement and their sense of self-importance and maybe even their narcissism, which has been bred through social media and the fact that they were so celebrated and chased after and wined and dined coming out of high school and given bunches of money, checks with a couple of commas in it. You've made them almost incorrigible to a certain extent. Of course, there's exceptions to the rule for the most part, but you see it. And I think there's going to be a long-term unintended circumstance consequence to this whole thing. I think the caliber of play in the NFL is going to continue to dip because you're going to have these entitled kids who do not want to listen to hard coaching or good coaching. Your best coaches, you're seeing it now, Nick Saban, you're seeing a lot of coaches, I don't want to coach college football anymore. I have to spend 365 days a year not only recruiting new players, but re-recruiting my old players. I have to deal with that kid coming into my office. I'm not playing Saturday unless I get 10 grand. 10 grand more. I've heard Rusty Manziel speak of that. The unintended consequence. You're going to breed these entitled, spoiled kids who do not love football enough. They like the money. They like the attention. They can enhance their brands on social media.
Well, I was going to say, isn't that the situation with the kid that was at Nevada, the quarterback,
who he
started the season and like they kind of got on a hot streak and he was like, all right, I'm playing way better than this deal that you all originally
right.
gave me or something like that said, and he wanted more money or he said that they weren't paying him stuff or withholding
right.
stuff.
That might be on the school because they promised something they didn't deliver.
Exactly.
But the way he did it, though, and look where UNL, well, they don't need him.
Yeah. And
they're in the conference title game. They're playing Boise, aren't they?
I was going to say, the thing that it backfired on him because
they go
out there and it was like, all right, you're not going to play. Backup comes in. They don't miss a beat.
And I think there's another thing that's going to be lost from college football, and I think it's a shame. The notion that a lot of these kids are not going to have any great deal of love or sense of tradition of the schools they go to. The rivalries don't mean as much anymore. Well, you might argue about that with the fights that broke out this weekend with the stupidity we saw. Ohio State getting upset at Michigan. Well, Michigan, those players are stupid because they tried to plant their flag on a turf field. It's not going to penetrate or stand up. That was stupid. And Ohio State gets mad, and there's a big brawl, and the police come out there and pepper spray the players. And I was looking at Ohio State, and, oh, now you want to fight? Now you want to fight.
My exact thoughts.
Now you want to fight.
You had 60 minutes to do it.
Yep, and Florida State, it happened there. It's happening. Just, you know, I've always maintained, lose with class, win with class. Confidence whispers is what I've always said. But now that type of behavior is glamorized in our society thanks to social media. Histrionics, people making fools of themselves, their sense of righteous anger, it's celebrated, and they get clicks, and they get – somehow they get some sort of clout out of the whole thing.
Yeah. But I will say, like, because I don't mind the flag planting. Now, I think the team that loses, you do have to lose with grace. I understand, like, especially if you lose at home and if it's your field. Like, I understand that, but you lost.
You lost.
Sometimes you just got to eat it.
Yep. And Ryan Day, good Lord, that was just horrible. And if they don't make a run in the playoffs, certainly he's going to lose his job. A lot of people think he should be fired now, which I think would be asinine because you still do have that roster that can win a national championship.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can still go on a run, but like if you go out and you're bouncing the first round,
yeah,
he's done.
Bye. Because they spent $20 million on that roster. That roster was built to win a national championship and especially built to beat a depleted Michigan team who's nothing like they were last year when they won the national championship. And Ryan Day, he is so insecure, clearly. What was it a few years ago when Jim Harbaugh, who was then the coach of Michigan, said, well, some people are born on third base and they act like they hit a triple. He's talking about Ryan Day.
Yep.
And the notion that your team isn't tough enough to beat us in a physical-type game. Well, guess what, Ohio State? You're not built that way. You were built with those amazing wide receivers, that finesse type of explosive offense. But for some reason, Chip Kelly and Ryan Day figured, no, we're going to sit there and try to go mano-to-mano in Michigan. And as a result, you get embarrassed.
Ego.
The worst law. Yeah, just ego. Absolute ego. So it's crazy. We're going to find out 8 o'clock the latest college football rankings. But coming up, oh boy, Falcon fans are on the war path. You ought to hear what some of them were saying on social media. We're going to have that for you next. And can the Falcons possibly get right at Minnesota against a 10-2 team? My answer is surprisingly, yes.
Pace yourselves. It's going to be a crazy night.
This is 92.9 The Game tonight.
On Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
Has to leave town right now. He's the worst quarterback probably ever next to Desmond Ridder. I've never seen a worse quarterback play for the Atlanta Falcons in my entire life. Like, he needs to leave.
The Atlanta Falcons just lost to the Chargers because they overrated Kirk Cousins. Kirk Cousins threw 4 interceptions. If y'all don't think he the most overrated player or in the top 10 of all time in NFL history, y'all crazy as hell. Kirk Cousins killed that whole game. He killed the spirit of the Falcons today.
Well, I guess he's not invited to the cookout any longer. That invite has been rescinded. Welcome back. It's Tribble time. Nighttime with Tribble. That's what's happening. This fan base on the warpath, and deservedly so. I got to tell you, that was absolutely awful, what we witnessed on Sunday against the Chargers for a myriad of reasons. Number one, the Chargers had just played Monday night, had to fly across the country to play a Falcon team that was on a bye week. The Falcons had that bye week to self-scout, self-reflect, rest, recharge, heal. Look at what has worked and what hasn't worked. And it clearly, the bye week did the defense a hell of a lot of good. Defense showed up big time on Sunday. With 5 sacks, that's half the total of the entire season. He came in with 11, and they had 5. Very winnable game, but 3 just horrible interceptions by Kirk Cousins. I was thinking on that, especially the one, well, there's 2 that come to mind. Of course, the pick 6 was pretty egregious. That was a 4th and 5. He throws it out there on the flat. Clearly a bad decision. That route was jumped. Guy picks it off, takes it back in for a touchdown. And that would have been, what, a 57, 56-yard field goal, but you've lost all confidence in your place kicker right now, Younghoe Koo. He has not been himself this year and for a big part of last year as well, for whatever reason. And not to mention, he also has a hip injury. So you have the physical injury with the psychological injury because you know that it's in his head now, so trying a field goal when customarily you probably would have with him when he was at the peak of his powers, that was out the window. Why not punt? Why not punt on that play? I know it's easy to be a Monday morning quarterback, Dom. I know.
Hey, I was going to say real quick, which kicker right now do you trust more, Youngway or Justin Tucker?
Didn't they bench him too? And Justin Tucker's going to be a Hall of Famer.
Right.
Talking about the Ravens kicker, and he's got the yips now for whatever reason.
It's crazy.
It's the weirdest thing. I wonder if it's a account of when you have just one job that you are sorely focused on, sometimes that can be a little much to the point where you think about it too much to the point where it's almost paralysis of analysis. But I don't know, though, but it's what you do. You're a professional. You've done it a million times. I don't get it.
So the thing that I've heard a lot of kickers say, it's kind of similar to, like, your golf swing and how, for whatever reason, sometimes your golf swing is just a little off. Yeah. And, like, maybe you kind of try
and refine
it. You
can say that in baseball, too, when a guy's in a slump.
Yeah. And, like, you're, like, maybe just trying to tweak it too much because you're in a slump. So maybe you're just doing something different. Maybe you're choking it up a little bit too much or something like
that. Well, you also saw Koo. He drastically changed his approach this season, kind of a very unorthodox, kind of wide-legged, weird-looking approach.
He's, like, right directly behind the ball,
right
too.
Yeah, directly behind the ball as well.
Yeah, it looks weird.
And it clearly hasn't done him well. I mean, yeah, there's a lot of reasons for that. And it's also interesting also because think about this. Maybe just 25 years ago, a 50-yard field goal, the success rate was maybe 50%. Now they're routine.
Yeah, it's expected.
Now kickers are crazy. Mm-hmm. Did you see the Patriots kicker? He tried that 68-yarder on Sunday. He missed it by 2 yards.
Yeah, I was saying, he wasn't far off.
He absolutely boomed that thing, and that was outdoors as well. So kickers are better than they ever have been for the most part, but for some reason, it's got to be all psychological because if you mess up with your mechanics, you can usually fix that. You can diagnose it pretty quickly and go back to doing what you're doing. It's got to be something psychological. I don't know. It's the weirdest thing, but that interception was terrible. But the one that really just made me almost want to, if I had a toddler next to me, I would have picked the toddler up and thrown it at the TV, was that little floater.
They're
in the red zone, and Kirk Cousins, he probably had about 5 yards. He could have run and slid, or I think Bijan Robinson's
Bijan
over right there.
Bijan Robinson's right in front
of
him.
But he just tried to just lob it. And where does he lob it? Into triple coverage, and it's intercepted. What is he thinking? What is that? I don't understand it.
I looked back at the still shot of that frame of the end zone. There's 5 Chargers and 2 Falcons receivers. I have no idea what he was looking at.
That is crazy. And, of course, now you have everyone clamoring for Michael Penix, and I don't blame you. I don't blame you. I don't think it's happening.
I mean, 3 straight games without a touchdown,
I know, but
I
guarantee you, though, if he comes out and stinks up the joint in the first half against Minnesota, I'm sorry. It's time to bring in the young left-hander. And that would be devastating for Kirk Cousins because where's he going? He's going back to where he played for the past 7 years in Minnesota, that type of homecoming there. Yep. That would be devastating to his psyche if that happened. I know a lot of you are thinking, who cares about his psyche? You got to win games. You got to perform. Yeah, I get that. I get that, certainly. But you got to be careful with morale as well. But you also got to be careful of the morale of the team. If he keeps stinking up the joint, the team's going to be thinking, we're doing our job. Why aren't you doing his? And now the defense comes around, and it's such a typical frustrating thing about this Falcons. It seems like this has been the case over multiple generations of Falcons coaches and GMs. One side of the ball shows up, the other side is a liability, and vice versa. They can't seem to put it together all that frequently for whatever reason.
And what about the coaching staff? Like, the decision there also, are you gonna bench Kirk Cousins, who's making $48
million? Yep. That's another thing. And could it be from upstairs as well?
Next year?
We're paying him a guaranteed $100 million. He's playing. But by the same token, you can absorb the cap hit, like Denver did with Russell Wilson, who, by the way, congratulations.
Hey, thank you.
Your Steelers are thriving right now.
Yes, we are.
What do you think has turned everything around up there? It's got to be Arthur Smith in a certain way, and Russell Wilson's buy-in.
Yeah, it's a combination.
And getting away from the toxic Sean Payton.
Goodness. Yeah, it is. It's been a combination of a lot of things. It's been Arthur Smith and his offense finally gelling. Russell Wilson and Justin Fields both played very well for us this year, and the defense, they're the highest-paid defense in the league. They've played like it for the most part, had a few moments this season where they let it go. But outside of that, it's just been complimentary football, let me say that.
Well,
correctly.
No matter how many times the Chiefs managed to win a one-possession game and miraculously win on the last play of the game.
Right, right.
This might be the Steelers' year.
Hey, man. The Ravens
are maddeningly inconsistent.
Yeah, it's.
But the Steelers, they can win ugly. They win those ugly.
That's
those are Mike Tomlin
at.
Games.
Yes,
That's his recipe.
That is his.
And now they're scoring a lot of points.
Yeah, finally have an offense that can complement that great defense.
What, Russell throw for 414 on Sunday?
Which was like the most yards a Pittsburgh quarterback has thrown in like 5 years.
But here's why it's easy to be cynical and negative. That takes no intellectual power whatsoever,
right,
just to be
easy.
Cynical. Yeah, that's easy to do. And I do it all the time. But the fact that defense came around on Sunday, yes, I know Justin Herbert's a guy that does hold on to the ball for a little bit too long. That's the knock on him, as talented as he is, and you're able to get 5 sacks. But the Falcons' defense has gotten better and better against the run over the past 4 or 5 games. Now, the big knock on them was, for the most part, in a lot of ways, teams were very successful on first and second down running the ball, setting up third and very manageable. And that puts a lot of pressure under defensive backs, because third and short, second and short, anything's possible with a playbook. The playbook is wide open. Anything can possibly happen. I'm hoping the defense finally turned a corner and can get a little consistent. Arnold Ebiketie, what do you have, a couple of sacks on Sunday? He was all over the place. We've been waiting for him to assert himself. Grady Jarrett with a sack. Grady Jarrett isn't what he has been. He's an aging player coming off a knee injury, but he's still very valuable, still a very good player, still a distinguished professional football player. But the fact that you do have all this firepower on offense and this defense has come around, you absolutely can go up there and beat a 10-2 Vikings team. This is what I said. I did a little post after the Falcons flyover on Sunday, which I did at the Signia Hotel, the Signia Hilton, which I recommend highly. That place is unbelievable. Beautiful place. I said, you know, the Falcons have 5 very winnable games left. They also have 5 very losable games left, because that is the NFL, and that's especially the nature of the Atlanta Falcons. And this is why. This has always been kind of the knock on Kirk Cousins, what he will do. He will look like a bona fide Hall of Famer 3-4 weeks in a row. Then he'll go up and he'll crap the bed for a couple of weeks in a row, or 3 weeks in a row, or he hasn't thrown a touchdown pass in a month. He has more. What does he have in the last 3 games? 6 interceptions and 4 lost fumbles.
4 lost fumbles, 0 touchdowns.
It's just unbelievable. And playing quarterback's the hardest thing to do in all of sports. You have to account for 21 other people, everybody on your squad and everybody on defense. You have to know where all of them are simultaneously, and anticipate when a receiver's going to be open or where they're supposed to be. There's a lot of information to process. And he's been very good at that for the most part. And he has been a very good pro, but he's not a great quarterback. He's just been a very good quarterback, but he's been a horrible quarterback these last few games. And this is what I even said this during the Falcons flyover after the Saints game. Uh-oh. Falcons teams of old, when they lose a game like this, this is indicative. You can expect a slide. You can expect another loss, then another loss, then another loss. They're doing what they've always done. And that's clearly a kind of a theoretical argument based on things I've witnessed in the past. But you got to think that Kirk Cousins is good enough to go out and have another one of his magical games where he can throw for over 400 yards. Because guess what? The Vikings are very good defensively, especially. They're 5th in points allowed, 18.3. They're allowing the least rushing yards. They have the 4th most sacks and the most interceptions. So that's going to be a challenge. You got to take care of the ball on Sunday. Absolutely. But they're just 28th in passing, 9th in scoring. They're average at running the ball at best. You have a winnable game up there. I'm not very confident, though, I got to tell you. I'm trying to convince myself to be confident, because what I've seen, but it really has nothing to do with what's going to transpire on Sunday or the 4 games after that.
Here's. Can I give you a little bit of a confidence boost?
Yes, please. I'm all for it.
Sam Darnold. Maybe he reverts to the Sam Darnold.
Maybe.
Because he's done that a few times this season, where he's had a game or two where he had, I feel like, 3 interceptions or something like that, and he played poorly.
And that's the difference, you know. Any NFL quarterback, clearly they're good enough to be in the NFL for the most part. Some guys, why is he even in the league?
Nathan,
I get that.
Peterman.
But yeah, exactly. But that's the difference between he and like your elite quarterbacks, like a Mahomes,
right,
and Josh Allen. Josh Allen, he started eliminating his turnovers as well. But they cannot be as consistent. It's the consistency thing, week in and week out. I mean, guys like Tom Brady, not the most physically gifted athlete by any stretch of the imagination, but it was his approach. He always knew what he's going to do before the ball was snapped. He didn't react. He already had a proactive plan. And plus, there's nothing he hasn't seen on a football field, which is what baffles me about what Kirk Cousins is doing right now. There's nothing he hasn't seen on a football field at his age, 35 years old.
Yeah, at this point, you've been in the league for over a decade. Yeah. You've seen it all.
And I know the Chargers maybe have disguised some things and maybe fooled him a little bit, but still, the fact you have seen everything on a football field, you should be able to anticipate that. That's why you didn't see Tom Brady make those mistakes. That's why Tom Brady was successful even at the age of 45. So it's just, it's absolutely baffling to me. All right, coming up next, we're going to do some headlines. How about the Atlanta Hawks? Aren't they fun? Man, Trae Young has been a ripple in an otherwise stagnant pool. Not this year. And also, when it comes to the Trevor Lawrence issue with that linebacker, was it Azeez Al-Shaair? I'm blaming the victim. And Rex Ryan may support me on that as well. Coming up next, Sports Radio 929 The Game.
Let's go get it, baby. Let's go do it. Come on.
Sports doesn't stop at 9, and neither do we.
Let's get the show going, man.
This is 92.9 The Game tonight on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
It's Tribble at Night, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, flagship station of the Atlanta Falcons and the Atlanta Hawks. And how about our Atlanta Hawks? Not going to get too over my skis, but they certainly are fun to watch this year. I must say that. They're now 11-11. They've won 4 in a row, beating New Orleans last night. Dyson Daniels, what a revelation he is. We get him in the trade from New Orleans, and we knew he was going to be a really good defensive player. And kind of the knock on him, well, he's going to give you maybe 7-8 points a night, but he's a defensive stopper. Well, guess what? He's also averaging about 13.8 points per game as well. And just a terror defensively. Physical, can anticipate. Very active with his hands, can clog up passing lanes, knows exactly what to do. Zachary Richichet, not bad for a rookie. What, 13 points, 5 boards? He's fit in perfectly fine. He looks like he feels very confident and relaxed being a 19-year-old in the NBA. Now, I know you want the number one overall draft pick to be this transcendent talent, but that wasn't available in this draft necessarily at first glimpse, but he certainly hasn't been disappointing. And Trae Young is playing relaxed and happy and confident like he should. He's averaging 20 points, 12 assists a game, and he is certainly, it's more and more apparent, he is an absolute elite passer. And the depth of this team as well. Last night, the Hawks bench outscored the Pelicans bench 52-29. So something to be excited about. Anything could happen. It's a very long season. I understand that. But could this Hawks team, with their depth and the fact that your starting five is playing so well and you're getting offense out of Dyson Daniels as well, could the Hawks end up being a 5 or 6 seed in the East? Who knows? You never know. I will say this, though. The NBA has gotten to where I don't enjoy it like I once did. And you see a lot of people online kind of supporting my claim as well. They show these ridiculous sequences in the NBA. Team has the ball. They chuck up a 3. They miss. Get an offensive rebound. Throw it back outside. They chuck up another 3. Miss. Defense gets the ball. Takes it to the other end. They shoot a 3. Miss it. Kick it back out for another 3. Miss it.
Yep.
I don't like it.
Yep.
I don't like it. And that's your analytics, I guess, you know.
Three points is worth
more than 2, but it's not even fun watching anymore.
Yeah, that's why like when I really appreciate guys that still have a mid-range game.
Right.
Like that's why like DeMar DeRozan is one of the most fun players to watch for me because like he actually still uses that area.
Well, hell, McCollum for
CJ,
New Orleans.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a guy that's averaged 20 points a game for the past 10 years. He's never been an all-star. But he's just, okay, I'll just filter into the paint, and I'll just make a mid-range. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
Let me have that if you want to. I miss the big man with the back to the basket.
Yes.
Low post moves. Yeah. I miss Kevin McHale. I miss Hakeem. Guys that could really do work in the paint with their back to the basket. That's pretty to watch. and a little bit more physicality. You're not allowed to be physical anymore. Nobody wants to play defense anymore, it seems like. I know I sound like an old man yelling at the clouds. It's true.
Yeah.
It's just not as enjoyable or watchable anymore.
Absolutely. And it sucks because, like, I understand the whole positionless basketball idea.
Yeah.
And, like, I understand because the athletes are better than they ever have been.
Absolutely. Everyone, they're not better basketball players.
They're not better basketball players.
Except for the guys from Europe.
Right. Exactly. And that, I think, is what saturates the game and the viewing product.
Yeah. And also, the kids from Europe, the reason why you're seeing the European players coming over here and dominating, and a lot of people kind of resent that notion, but it's just a fact. All of our kids over here, when they play AAU ball in those elite basketball leagues they play in, they're playing 5-6 games a week. They're never practicing. Over there in Europe, those young kids who are basically playing against grown men at the age of 15, 16, 17 years old, they're practicing 5 days a week and playing a couple of games a week.
Yeah, they're professionals, basically.
Yeah, and they know how to play the game.
Yep.
It's not just the flamboyance. And that's also fun to watch, but I also like good old-school basketball as well. I'm not saying necessarily, you know, the prison yard stuff you saw in the 80s where guys were getting shanked in the paint, but
right.
A little bit of that isn't terrible.
Every once in a while.
90s basketball was just unbelievably fun to watch. But you just don't see it anymore. And it's gotten to where it's unwatchable, and they're hemorrhaging viewers, too.
Yeah.
So they are.
The product is not as good, and also the product is not as easily attainable. You
That's
know?
Right. Now all the various platforms.
Yeah.
Yeah, the NFL's trying their best to do that as well, aren't they? And and we couldn't have Braves games for the longest time until Bally's changed over to whatever it is now.
Right.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. They're making it more difficult to find, and now it costs a lot more money, too. Remember we thought, you know, cutting the cord would be the cheapest thing you could do. No, you just have to accumulate app
yeah.
after app, and that just adds up after a while. So there you go. All right, the NFL suspended Azeez Al-Shaair 3 games for that hit on Trevor Lawrence, the Texans linebacker. Now, D'Amico Ryans, and he's right about this, he says quarterbacks try to take advantage of the rule. They slide late to get that extra yard. And the defender's kind of left, well, what am I going to do? I have to try to make a play because he is in bounds. Patrick Mahomes is great at that. He'll act like he's going out of bounds. He'll kind of stop. And then he'll wait to get hit. And then what do you have? You have a personal foul call on that. The notion of sliding. Well, Rex Ryan has a very good point about this, the former Jets coach turned NFL analyst. Listen to what he had to say.
People teach, you know, hey, slide. When you're running out here, you slide. The hell you do, not when you're going full speed down the field and a defender's coming full speed at you. You don't slide. I can see this happens over and over and over again. All you have to do is watch every Saturday college football. 2 to 3 of these happen every single week.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sick and tired of it. You are not protecting your quarterback when you teach him how to slide when it's not in the open field. Open field, of course, that's great. Absolutely not here. If you want to get a concussion, you slide like this when contact's coming.
What should they be taught to do?
They should be taught to dive at the ankles of the defender or run the football and keep your head out of it. I would take the ankles of the defender. Run right there, dive at his ankles. Immediately, the guy's going to go to protect himself. He's not worried about tackling you. Look, the kid, absolutely, it was awful. All right, and yes, he's going to be suspended and things. But also, this happens all the time when a guy's just trying to make a tackle. All right, this is a big quarterback running here. Like, I am so sick and tired of it. Let's put a film together and actually teach our young quarterbacks how to protect themselves. I'm sick and tired of it. Mm.
I got to tell you, in spite of his veneers, which are very distracting with his ultra uber white
yeah,
teeth,
right?
Rex Ryan is so good. As at least, you know, he brings a lot of passion. He definitely has an opinion. Have you seen where he's openly lobbying for the Jets job, too?
Why the hell not?
I know he could be a bit of a clown. He made it all about himself, especially when Hard Knocks was there. Yes, he loves the camera, this, the, and the other, but he was a pretty decent coach. He's not as good as his dad, but he is spot on with that right there. Trevor Lawrence did slide kind of late. He did.
I agree with the notion. I think this example isn't the best one. Because I think that for me...
Well, it's the latest one, and it is an example.
Right, and it is an example.
Well, what do you mean, though?
I think there are better examples. Like, I think there are better examples of guys sliding super late. Like, to me, that one... I don't think Trevor slides super late. I think the defender has enough time to pull up and try and jump over.
Well, number one, don't go for his head. He could have still not gone for his head.
Exactly, right. And this guy also...
So he's not exonerated by it. And he has a track record.
Yeah, he's a repeat offender. So
oh, yes, he is.
He has a track record there. But I do understand what Rex is saying about guys sliding late and then that... And especially him being a defensive coordinator in his blood, he wants to kind of look out for the defensive guys. I think the idea of diving at the defender's ankles sets guys up to get kneed in the head a whole lot more, and then that just opens up concussions and stuff like that. But
is that as bad as a full frontal, a head-on-head, or a forearm to it, though?
Because I don't know.
Because when you dive at the ankles, they can't necessarily flex their knee and drive the knee towards you, so you're hitting a stationary.
Yeah.
It's interesting, but I think he has an interesting point. I've never really thought about it.
I do agree with the notion that quarterbacks do use that rule and abuse it way too much.
They do.
And I think they get hit a lot and they get up and look for the flag. And a lot of the times you need to protect yourself better. But I think because they know the refs are looking out for it and because they know that they're quarterbacks and they're super protected, they're going to get the call. So I'll take it.
Super entertaining NFL game last night. Very entertaining. Jameis Winston with the most Jameis Winston game that ever Jameis Winston. He was 34 of 58, threw for 497 yards, 4 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, but he had 2 pick sixes.
Yep. The full experience.
Do we have his soundbite after the game where he was asking the great divine? Do we have that one? Let me know when you have that. And the Broncos get the victory to go to 8-5. Browns fall to 3-9. But they should not fire their coach. I know that. Do we have the Troy Aikman soundbite? Here's Troy Aikman speaking on behalf of the Cleveland Browns coach, and I absolutely agree with him, despite the fact they're 3-9.
This year hasn't been what people thought coming in, but the albatross is Deshaun Watson. That, you know, if you go to Jameis Winston earlier in the year, does this look different? Because I would say the defensive struggles in at least a small part have had to do with how inept the offense has been moving the football. I think it's affected the defensive play as well.
Yeah, he's a two-time coach of the year. Your owner's ridiculous. The Deshaun Watson thing is an albatross and was absolutely ridiculous. I think the Browns would be at least in contention if Jameis had been starting all year. And I know how erratic it can be. He had that year with Tampa Bay where he was a member of the 30-30 club, 30 touchdowns, 30 interceptions. But he went out there. Sean Payton really helped him clean up his issues with turning the ball over. And also, he got to work with Drew Brees, one of the best to ever do it. And Jameis Winston has certainly cleaned it up a little bit, but not necessarily last night, but 41-32. And Bo Nix, a lot of people were just laughing at the notion of Bo Nix being a starter in the NFL. He's proving everybody wrong, certainly. He has played very, very well, to say the least. Again, as for the Atlanta Hawks at 11-11, they got to go play at Milwaukee tomorrow night. Milwaukee got off to a slow start. They've won 8 of their last 10. Lakers come to town on Friday. Lakers aren't in any great shakes. And LeBron James, he's showing signs of age. He scored just 10 points in a loss to, I believe, Minnesota the other night. And then the Joker and the Nuggets come to town on Sunday. And, of course, Falcons at Minnesota on Sunday as well. I think they're a 5-point underdog as they try to improve on that horrible 6-6 mark. Vikings, of course, 10-2 on the year. Falcons still leading the division, though, by virtue of the tiebreaker, even though Tampa Bay... What a gutty. This is why I love Baker Mayfield, and this is why I think Tampa Bay is going to win this division. Tampa Bay is a tougher team, a more resilient team than the Atlanta Falcons. And it all starts with their quarterback, Baker Mayfield. Did you see him last week, Tom? He made a downfield block. He took a guy completely out of the play. Sunday, he gets taken out of the game, has to go into the tent limping. He comes out. He scratches and claws to get them in field goal position to beat Carolina in overtime. And I'm telling you, I'm really happy for Bryce Young. That time off was good for everybody's ready to throw him, put dirt on his grave. He has come out. He has played well. The game has slowed down for him. Carolina's a problem. If you think the Falcons are going to have it easy against Carolina the final week of the season, Carolina could totally come in here and beat you. Guess what? They almost beat Kansas City. They could have won the game on Sunday. That's the NFL. It's like I said.
Yep.
Falcons have 5 games left. They have 5 winnable games left, 5 losable games left. Maybe now, since the defense showed up on Sunday, they can get some consistency going from that and the offense can wake up and Kirk Cousins can take care of the ball. We shall see. All right, coming up top of the hour, I think it's 8 o'clock is when the college football playoff selections we made. We're going to get back into college football and talk a little bit about Georgia and Texas. And I still want to brag on Georgia Tech and Brent Key. God bless them for what they saw. Greatest football game I've seen in probably a decade the other night in Athens. It was fantastic. This is Tribble at Night, baby. Sports Radio 99 The Game.